views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Today for Mixed Plate, we are having the Cab doing an hour show here. I'm going to present the chair, Mickey Sussman. Hi, Mickey. How are you?
Thank you, Roland. Can you hear me good?
Yep.
All right. Well, aloha to all of our listeners around the island and around the world. And welcome to the Fifth Monday Community Advisory Board show. I'm Mickey Sussman, CAB Chair, and I'll be the moderator for the hour. KKCR is Kauai's independent, non-commercial, listener-supported community radio station. We seek to stimulate, educate, and entertain our audience to preserve, perpetuate, and celebrate Hawaiian culture, and to reflect the diversity of the local and world community. We provide a forum for overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented voices in music. The Kekahu Foundation facilitates this broadcasting opportunity. The Community Advisory Board advises the Kekahu Foundation, Board of Directors, the BOD, the governing body of our community radio station, on how programming and policies can best meet the educational and cultural needs of our island community. The CAB is mandated by grant funding KKCR receives from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the CPB, to operate independently from the Board of Directors and hold public meetings with the community to receive programming feedback, policy suggestions, and offer a starting point to those interested in learning about volunteering at KKCR. The CAB meets twice yearly at different locations around the island to make it easier for residents to attend. Membership in the CAB is a good opportunity for those who want to be part of our community radio but do not want a show and are more interested in community outreach, education, and opportunities for young people, as well as those who want to volunteer at the structural level to help maintain and strengthen our organization or to begin new programming directions. The CAB is instrumental in guiding most major policy decisions at KKCR. Current members of the Community Advisory Board include Mickey Sussman, Chair, Paul Moody, Vice Chair, Larry Magnuson, Secretary, Jim Kelly at Large, and Ed Cole is our applicant who will be voted on at our next meeting, which will be announced shortly when Paul returns, probably this next month. And we are soliciting members for the Community Advisory Board and also for the Board of Directors at all times, and applications are on the website. And please contact the CAB directly for more information from the link on the station website at www.kkcr.org. So, today we have no Kekahu Foundation board members with us, as we did last show, and we probably will in shows in the future, but we have a full show nonetheless. So we're going, and we decided we're going to hold off on calls till the end of the show if we have time, because we have a lot of information sitting here in the studio. And I want to thank and introduce our guests who've come up here, and everybody who's in here doing this show today. First and foremost, engineering today is Rolando, longtime KKCR volunteer who cares little for the seduction of the microphone. And we have, I'm going to have everybody introduce themselves with their credentials. So let's start with Ed Cole.
Aloha. Yeah, this is Ed Cole. Credentials, well, basically I spent about 20 years as a documentary videographer. In a variety of positions. I was director of video production for the Criminal Justice Center at the University of Alaska. I worked for Independent Public Television in Anchorage. I was a director for KHET Hawaii Public Television in Honolulu. And I've had 30 years as an instructional technologist at the University of Hawaii Kauai Community College. Also, I'm a founding member of KKCR, and I was on the first programming committee of KKCR. And that's about it.
Okay. Next, we have Larry Magnuson, if you'd like to say a few things.
This is Larry Magnuson. Ed, yours is a hard act to follow, but anyway, I've been on Kauai since late 70s, and I've been an orthopedic surgeon at Kauai Medical Group for a number of years, and I'm now retired, and I no longer have a beeper, for which I celebrate. But have a deep interest in what's going on Kauai, particularly how we can improve our health and medical care and our own lives, as well as the cultural issues. So I'm deeply appreciative for KKCR and the combination and opportunities that we have for the island of Kauai that we love so much.
Thank you, Larry. Also, I'd like to introduce Dr. David Saldana.
Hello. I introduced myself. I received a medical degree from Michigan State University College of Human Medicine in 1978. I moved to Kauai in 1984 and have worked in various capacities. For the past 12 years, I've been working for the state Department of Public Safety, delivering primary medical care to inmates around the state. And one of my interests, partly as a result of this work, is to try to understand the factors that our society promotes or creates that actually contributes or causes diseases. And so hopefully can share that with all of us as we learn to take responsibility and for our own health and the health of our community.
All right. Thank you, David. Thank you all. And the reason why I asked you all to come in today is, you know, the Community Advisory Board kind of has the job of being out in the community and taking feedback for the station in terms of the community's educational needs and just the important things, information we need to communicate to the community. And we're all out in different circles. And I think it's fair to say that there are some things that everybody's really concerned about in our community. We may not be able to articulate them in the same words. Some of us may not be able to articulate them at all. But I think these feelings are being shared by a lot of people now. And that's why I asked everybody who's in here today to maybe come and talk about some of these things that KKCR deals with, the community deals with, and some of these things that are really important to the community and the value that KKCR has in educating and informing and fulfilling our mission. So maybe we should start with you, Ed, about Ed's been involved in the media for a long time, and we're all having to deal with bias in reporting and information, and we all do have a bias. The question is really, how do we get the information we need out of what is being reported? And Ed, also, you've been involved in KKCR pretty much from the beginning, and you've seen a lot of the path that's evolved on the island, and also with the communications. You were one of the first ones on the island that was videoing and audio recording and producing documentaries with the new technology. So I think you'd be a good one to just share your feelings a little bit about where we're at with this whole media thing and our information highway. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I neglected to mention that, like Larry, I'm retired as an instructional technician.
Semi-retired.
Well, and so, actually, I've always been interested in community media since I was in Alaska, and I was involved as a VISTA volunteer in this project called Sky River. And that demonstrated to me the power of community media. And that power, basically I'll summarize the project. We used to take a film crew and go into a remote Alaskan village, and we'd ask people just walking around the village what was the biggest problem that they thought the village faced, and they'd tell us. And then we would go back to Anchorage at this time and edit the film, bring the film back to the community, have a community meeting, show that film, and ask if anybody wanted to add anything. We'd film that, and then we'd edit it, and we'd choose the spokesperson to go down to their state representative in Juneau, and we would play it back to them and ask them to respond. Videotape made this a lot better, because what happened when videotape was invented was that we would go into the community and do the same thing on video. And the community would pick a spokesperson. They'd go down to Juneau. They'd put the TV on the desk and say, here's what the people of Ammonic or whatever the village was think, and what are you going to do about it? And we'd videotape that, and we'd send it back to the village. Eventually, we wound up training people to use the portable video equipment and leaving them in the villages. And the villages started producing their own media and bicycling the tapes around and going down to Juneau, the seat of state government, and making demands on the state government. So I saw that basically by giving people access to the media, that the power relationship shifts from state officials coming in and telling how it's going to be in these Alaskan villages to the Alaskan villagers deciding what needed to be improved and making demands on the state legislators. And so this, eventually they were bicycling the tapes around from village to village. And long story short, it was a significant player in the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act. And so I've seen the power of community media and what it can do if you basically expand the franchise and access to that media. And I think that community radio can do that.
So you're sort of bypassing the second interpretation of whatever somebody says and getting the direct message to these people from the technology.
Exactly, because initially, if you looked at it, we were still editing because it was film back then. But video made it so that anybody could edit. And so as the technology improved, and this continues today with the Internet, you're empowering more and more people. Think of what it costs to basically run a television station. Well, now you can go live on YouTube and broadcast to the entire world from your bedroom.
Well, that's what I noticed, that since our educational movement has started, since the transformation, that a lot of people are posting on YouTube. Things go up on YouTube right away. And the post speaks for itself. So it's one way of dealing with bias. You know, I guess that's one of KKCR's main strong points, really, that people can come in like that and talk from the person, the source, can come in and give the information.
Well, the thing to remember is that, you know, media can't tell us what to think, but it can tell us what to think about. And that's the power of mass media. So anytime you can expand the franchise so that people can have an influence on determining what we should think about, I consider that a positive step.
The discussion, to frame the discussion from the beginning.
Exactly.
Right. Frame the discussion for the community rather than whatever else. So, I'm grateful that, you know, we have this opportunity, and I think the community is faced with a lot of information now. I guess the main thing really on everybody's mind is really the health of our island. Not even specifically in one area, but the health in terms of, it, of course, the people, the Aina, the water, the future generations. So we have a lot of technology, and we have a lot of studies coming forward now on the last 20 years or so, of what we've been doing to the land and the water and to ourselves. And we're going to have to sort through this stuff. We're going to have to make our decisions. We're all going to be faced with it one way or the other. I mean, maybe you want to talk about this a little bit, Larry, with the what we were talking about, how we get studies now, we get information, and none of us are really chemists, and we need help interpreting this information. We need to make determinations about it. And maybe you can talk about your feelings a little bit about that, Larry, being a medical doctor.
Well, with any sophisticated situation, we have to think first of who we are talking to. So on our island, we have people who may have only gone to sixth grade. And at the other end, we have people who are PhDs and MDs and are highly educated people. So who do we believe? We've got newspapers, and we do have interpretation of information with letters to the editor, and we have various writers who compose information to the newspaper, and we have KKCR where we can argue the points out. So I think most of us need to spend some time looking at the information, and you need to think about who it is giving information or what the source is or where did you read it. And this has to be analyzed at whatever education level you might have. As a physician, we have our journals, we have textbooks, and nowadays we have videos, and we go to conferences to find out various aspects of medical care. And we have a system where we can discuss this. The papers presented will be discussed, and there are both pros and cons. And then, after a few years, somebody may find, well, what was in that paper doesn't work anymore. And so there are changes that go on as time goes by. So the assimilation of information is really important to all of us, particularly when it comes to certain decisions that have to be made for the health and well-being of our island and for our people. So I think these are important aspects that each one of us has to consider. But bottom line, it takes effort. And you listeners out there are part of the effort that needs to be done, and we do our best to provide as much as possible.
Okay, well, I guess there are a few reports that have come out recently, one from the UC Davis and one from the U.S. Geological Survey. Again, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a chemist, so I don't know if it's appropriate to, for me to really talk about them that much. But these are, except to say that these are coming from fairly reputable sources that have little of an axe to grind one way or the other, as best as we have. One's from a public university and one's from the U.S. Geological Survey. And I think, like Larry says, we need to be looking at this. It is concerning the pesticides. It's concerning pesticide exposure. And, you know, while we all we all have to acknowledge that chemicals have played a great part in our lives, and we all use chemicals, and we want to use them safely. But the question is, new with this new evidence coming out, what are we comfortable with? What do we feel we have a good amount of evidence now? What are we comfortable with for our own choices? And the risks that are involved, what kind of risks are we comfortable taking with our families, with our children, with the land? So, you know, maybe this is a good time for you, Dr. Saldana, David, to talk a little bit about some of your experiences with the lower end of our society, the disenfranchised, and maybe what you see could be developing, a turning that could happen. And you brought in a couple books. I think we might want to mention the names of these books for everybody. Probably some people have read them, but they're really powerful books. I had a chance to just barely look at them, and I was pretty impressed. But as a kulian of medical doctors, you know, you have certain responsibilities, and I know that it's a passion with you guys, and that's why you're here. So maybe we should let you share your feelings.
Thank you. You know, what I've heard so far comes back to one of my basic beliefs, is that a human being's reality is very much governed by our beliefs or our language or our ideas that we're exposed to and develop, you know, from our history, our culture, our time and place that we live. And I think now more and more of us are understanding that the way of looking at things is very similar to how we used to look when we thought the earth was flat. We're realizing that our current view of our systems, whether it's financial or even putting chemicals into the environment, that we can't take a very limited, narrow view, that we just buy it, we use it for a purpose, and that's it. We now know that they're stored in our bodies, they don't degrade, they combine with other things to create unpredictable chemicals and reactions. And so we need a much broader view and understanding that I think goes back to, I think Ed or Larry mentioned, but we have to work at this. We can't wait to be spoon-fed. We have to study what is the latest thinking, and it gets to these books I'd like to share the titles of. One is called Earth Dance, Living Systems and Evolution by Elizabeth Sartoris. This book is basically helping us have a view of how all matter and energy in the universe that we have learned to observe over these latest years, and since quantum physics has built telescopes and computers, and it's helped us see these systems from galaxies to our Earth and how life has evolved on Earth. It's a very different view than would have ever thought, and very exciting in its potential if we learn to use this information to create systems that are sustaining, self-renewing, and are built on cooperation and not competition. And another book is The Rainbow and the Worm, The Physics of Organisms by Mei Hwan Ho. And this basically describes how, with the latest information from, you know, what physics has basically developed since Einstein's breakthroughs, is now creating instruments where we can observe organisms in the living state rather than dissecting them and homogenizing them in test tubes. We can actually see proteins in water in a living state, and it's very amazing, the liquid crystalline properties and communication abilities that we never dreamed were there. And one final book I'd like to share with you, it's called The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community by David C. Corton. And this is just describing how our worldview has developed over the past 5,000 years, how our most governments on Earth are built on these assumptions and worldviews of top-down, kind of guy with the biggest muscle and might wins, and in a competitive grab, extracting from the earth. And the newer view that we need to gain is that we need to learn how to cooperate and give back to keep these systems sustainable.
Thank you, David. I want to just say something. I started looking at this great turning, and something I realized that's really important. A lot of us that are not as articulate as some, we all are experiencing these feelings. You know, some would call it hopelessness. I look at it more as just a little bit awe and overwhelming of just so many things that are happening and how big this thing is. And I just think it's really great for us to be able to read or listen to or talk with people who can articulate what we're feeling. It helps us understand our own feelings. And I think this is really important, and it builds self-esteem, and it builds empowerment. And I just want to suggest that everybody get involved, you know, whatever way you're comfortable, and participate, because it seems like it's really true. If we're not part of the solution, we're part of the problem. I forget who said that. Whether it was Bobby Seale or Bob Dylan. But it still rings pretty true today. And, you know, I'm just really grateful that KKCR is here, and everything that we've done all these years is, seems to me, is paying off big time. And you guys want to talk a little bit more about any medical, Larry, you want to?
Well, I would just like to say that all of the scientific information is very important. But at the same time, we need to study who we are talking to and how people can understand the scientific aspects and apply it to their lives in a reasonable way. And on top of that, we have the politics. And this is very important that we have politicians who are able to assimilate information and present it in a believable and truthful manner. And this has to be sorted out by each individual, and then we vote. We have a number of other aspects which have to do with our jobs and our economic situation, and that also has to be considered when we're talking about risks of various aspects of our life. The chemicals that are used to control the weeds by the roadside. Why don't we have people out there cutting it mechanically? Well, then we start talking about economics. So when we come to any particular problem, and we recently have been confronted with the GMO situation, we have to make decisions and do to the best of our ability what we can. And I don't know, Ed, what do you think about our current state of the media in its ability to do this, in comparing, say, Fox with Democracy Now?
Or also, let me interject for a second. What about our upcoming elections? And what about if you could identify a little bit about propaganda to help everybody maybe sort through some of our naturally occurring biases wherever we are? But some of these standard propaganda strategies that all sides have partaken in, but some of us don't recognize.
Well, I guess the I'm kind of two minds. If you're talking about mass media or corporate media, I think we're in a terrible state. On the other hand, because of the advances in technology, programs like Democracy Now is like you can pretty much get it wherever you are. You can get it on the radio, you can get it on the internet, you can get it on YouTube, you can get it, but comparing Democracy Now to like the nightly news, it's like night and day. And also, even I might say that talk radio, like that was a lot of people, most successful people using talk radio have been from the, I guess, political right. But it is talk radio, people on the radio talking. Any kind of medium that's a mass media amplifies the voice. And so the Citizens United case is greatly disturbing to me because basically they're equating speech to money. But what about free speech? How can you equate something free with money? Fortunately, there are alternative technologies that are reversing this, and there's community initiatives and community radio and things like that that can be a voice to counter that. But people have to analyze media, like we were talking about the, scientific studies, and Larry was talking about the scientific method and understanding how that works. But people should keep in mind there's a difference between a study and a report on a study, because a study is a primary document. A report on a study, that's where the interpretation comes in, no matter what that interpretation is. But then that presents a problem, because then you have to go look at the original study, and it depends upon your, you know, many factors, what that means to you, and it also takes a great amount of time. And we're all humans, unlike corporations that can live forever. We only have a certain amount of time. We have to look at where we're going to invest that time. Again, that's where the mass media can set the agenda for a lot of people. And so what we need is more alternative medias, community media, to counter that. And you've also got, because there's also a responsibility for people to be informed. And community media hopefully can do that in a way that you don't want to go out. Like, basically what happens is they call them walled gardens on the internet, but you go on and look for something, not for information, but for affirmation. And so all of a sudden you're in a world where you're constantly looking at information that reinforces what you already believe, as opposed to looking for information about the subject. You're looking for affirmation, not information. And that's a very difficult thing to overcome.
I think something to consider, too, is this, when you say that some of the talk radio that's been most successful has been right-wing talk radio, what about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that started a while ago because of the lack of educational information on commercial media? And public radio, when was that, the 50s, 60s? And gave birth to, first, a lot of educational TV. We all grew up with educational TV. And a lot of things do get funded from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, most of the community radio stations, and it's specifically for that reason. So in a way, that's much bigger than the talk radio, the private talk radio, maybe. Maybe we should talk a little bit about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You know, not too many people realize what that is. That's a government entity that provides funding for educational programs that are considered, that may not appear on commercial radio as much as they could, that are underrepresented. And you know, we've all benefited from that, from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and public broadcasting. Whether it's Sesame Street, we all grew up with Sesame Street, and our kids did. You know, now it's different. The world has changed, and public TV is different now than it was. But these are things that have high value for people. And we do get the most impartial, that's a correct word, information, with the potential to get the most impartial, it seems like, information from the public trusts.
Yeah, that's, I think that's up to every individual themselves to decide, because when you're talking about, information, how do you, like basically whoever's beating the drum the loudest is heard the most, and that's what most people are going to tend to believe. And so what happens with the Corporation Public Broadcasting, for instance, I remember when portable videotape became a reality, and a lot of the they were unfunded completely. People like Rain Dance Corporation and Video Freaks and Global Village and Ant Farm, all of these, they were video collectives that basically were the precursors to what we have now, and people are carrying them around in their pockets on their cell phones. So the ability that's never occurred in the history of the world before is for people to coordinate their activities collectively without being proximate to each other. In other words, things can go worldwide and activities can occur all over the world and be coordinated. That's never happened in the history of the world. And now it's a reality. It's almost like the human nervous system is being collectivized and externalized into media outlets. And so, you know, then the problem becomes, how do you evaluate all of that information? What's good, what's not? And basically that requires quite a bit of looking into what they call media literacy and propaganda analysis. You've got to know what the source is and know what you think the source is trying to convey and make sure they're not pulling one over on you. And it's a skill. And you have to learn that skill if you want to be media literate and to be able to take just volumes of data coming at you, convert that data into information, and then act on that information, and then see what happened, and then do it again. I mean, that's how things move forward.
Well, that's a mouthful to do that. But that is our responsibility now. It seems like there's no avoiding that. That's our kuleana, to take whatever we can, whatever we're comfortable with, and try to analyze it to the best of our ability. And it's interesting you would compare that to a nervous system, a human nervous system. Does that trigger anything, David?
Well, yes, very much so. One of the conclusions in one of the books I mentioned, Earth Dance, is analogizing the World Wide Web to what bacteria have done from the beginning of biological life on Earth. They have been communicating through their genetics and altering their environments and acting, you know, from soil to water to air, and being able to communicate. And now the World Wide Web is very similar in the function potential, and that's what she's labeling it as, is a meta network, a nervous system that is humanity's for this earth. Those kind of thoughts are it's the difference between seeing the earth as flat in that era and where we're heading, and hopefully we'll get there to make a great difference.
We are getting there, and I think we have a lot of community organizations that are manifesting what you're talking about. You know, I hope we're reaching people today, because I just really think it's important to articulate all these things that we're working on and continue to connect on whatever level we can. You know, we have a big movement on Kauai for growing our own food sovereignty. And aloha aina. And really, I couldn't agree more. It's like taking care of it's our body. It's what it is. The earth is our body, our ancestor and our descendants. And
the other thing to consider is that the more information you have, the greater a responsibility you have to act on that information and become a participant instead of just a bystander.
That's what Tyrone Hayes was talking about a couple months ago, the professor from Berkeley, who's an atrazine expert. That's where he had to make his main decision after he researched all this and found all this information. What was he supposed to do with it? Just keep quiet about it? And so he decided not to. He decided to talk with people about it. And thereby saved himself from containing that all inside. I mean, that's enough to make you pretty sick, to hold on to something that you have a feeling or your conscience is uncomfortable with. Put it like that. You know, I mean, there's a lot of mental health issues going around and a lot of mental health building that can come out of the situation we're in now, what we're all having to deal with. You know, I think, again, David, you've talked with a lot of people. You've dealt with the prison population. And you must have got a feeling of, their state of mental health, their state of mental participation. You know? Maybe, we do have a lot of people on Kauai that are disenfranchised. A percentage of people on Kauai are disenfranchised one way or the other, you know, and end up in the jails. You know, we haven't talked about that very much, but maybe we ought to let you give just a little bit of your experience working with the correctional facility.
Well, I can say that it was a real eye-opener when I became involved with the department, because I really believe that most people would want to be well if they had the information, that it's things outside of our control that make us sick, that institutions are there to help people. But what I've come to see is that it's such a complex problem, but it really comes back to that word disenfranchises. One of those words that are easy to gloss over, but it's saying so much. It's about injustice, whether it's access to education, economic injustice, and people who don't know how to communicate and are living under horrible, stressful conditions of needing to pay the bills or parents on drugs and so forth. Their stress is making them sick and making them behave in ways that they would not do if their environment was different. So I really believe that as a community, we need to focus on creating the most healthy, well-informed citizenry and environment, and we will see the body will heal itself. It always strives to create that. We tend to get in the way with our misconceptions and vested interests and wrong behaviors. So
I know, Larry, you're concerned about the prison population. You had some thoughts about that, and even the privatization of prisons and the amount of people that we have in there, and some of your experiences in other places.
I've traveled around a bit and seen some of the extremes of prisons, if you will. In Africa, in Sierra Leone, I once visited the main prison in Freetown. And I must say that that was something out of the 16th century. There was very little given to people except some food, water, and possibly a place to lay down. And we compare that to what we possibly could do with our own prison population in terms of education and putting people on the right track. The most disturbing thing to me is how America takes people out of our population and puts them in the worst possible population of fellow prisoners. And they learn from each other, and what they learn is not always something that's conducive to a good population. We as a nation have more per capita prisoners than any other country in the world. What a shame. We don't need to keep people in so long, number one. Number two, if they are out back with their families and things like that, they can at least get their communications with people. They can unite with the population and become responsible for families and communities of themselves. And this thing needs to be reconsidered as far as the United States is concerned. And I don't see that happening very soon, but we need to work on that.
I did hear an interesting program not too long ago on, I think it was KPFA, had Angela Davis on, and she was talking about the prison system and the possibility of a big change in not locking people up, but having their communities deal with them, their peers deal with them. In other words, what we call the stink eye, big time. Somebody does something nasty in the community, and the whole community is on them. So they will never do that again. There is no escape, and there's no profit in locking them up. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, I see. To me, the biggest problem is the privatization of prisons. If you have to lock people up, that's a social problem. And if you privatize it and put a profit incentive behind it, you're going to get an increase in the prison population. That's why I think we have more people locked up than any other country in the world. And so, you know, there's a profit motive there. Where are you going to invest your money? In Marriott or the Correctional Corporation of America? Who's going to always have a steady supply of people? Correctional Corporation of America. They're going to have lobbyists, and they're going to lobby to pass more laws and lock more people up. Why? Because they make a profit doing so. So,
I would disagree a little bit, but just add something that I learned in Africa. In East Africa, when somebody does something bad, instead of beating them or incarcerating them or some other form of punishment, the village will gather around the individual, and they will essentially touch and hug and make him part of the village again. And with this, he regains his self-respect as well as his benefit to the village involved.
Whoa, that's pretty awesome right there. Really. Maybe, David, you want to talk a little bit about your experience? You have some experiences with the prison that you were working. Are those state facilities, or are they private facilities, or even the ones that you must know some of the people, some of your patients must be transferred around here and there, and their families? And
yes, there's mainly estate facilities is where I work, but there's quite a variety of how these facilities do their work. For example, just one will provide lots of programs outdoors, gardening, families coming in, children visiting. Others will be more punishment-oriented. So there's a lot of learning we have to do.
Okay, everybody, I guess we're getting time to come to a close. Sorry we couldn't take any calls today, but maybe we can continue this conversation somewhat. The next CAB show, I think, is in September, the fifth Monday. So let me thank everybody for coming in, and Roland on the board, and Ed Cole. And if you want to say, you all want to say one finishing statement?
Just thanks for the opportunity, and aloha.
Aloha, gentlemen. Thank you very much for spending your time here. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Very cool. And we're going to continue. Teach your children well.